To sync this podcast to the episode, pause now and hit play right after the previously on.
Hi, welcome to the Outlander podcast for episode 502. I'm Tony Graffia, writer and executive producer, and I'm here with
Luke Skelhaas, co-executive producer and writer, and Tony and I wrote this episode together.
And we jump right in with a cold opening here, showing a tar and feathering being done by the regulators. And this scene actually used to be, it was written as part of the ending of episode 501. But as happens, occasionally we do move scenes to different episodes. And I believe in the case of episode 501, it was better to end on the ending that's there, which is, I believe, the Murtaugh-Jamie ending, and that we would kick off this episode. So we kind of stole this scene from Matt. So I give Matt credit on this scene. It's a great scene, and I think it's important because, you know, we always show the rebels who are, you know, the victims and the victims of corruption and the people who are being mistreated and rightfully, you know, protesting and being upset about what's being done to them. But since we have Jamie as part of the, you know, working for the crown in this episode, who's supposed to be hunting them, stopping them, we have to show that, you know, he's, you know, these guys are protesting, but they're also doing a lot of violence. There is some collateral damage in the towns that they go in and stir up the violence.
Yeah.
So they're not, you know, totally, I wouldn't say blameless, but they're not doing a peaceful protest. You know, they're choosing to hurt people, some people that are involved, some people get hurt that maybe aren't directly involved. So maybe there's a little bit of ambiguity there into, you know, who's right and who's wrong.
And that'll be part of, you know, Jamie's struggle in this episode too, is he sees for himself that these guys aren't all good. That they are wreaking some havoc on the backcountry, and that's a shock to him.
Yeah.
And it puts in stark sort of contrast the picture he had of what his godfather was up to and what he finds out is really happening.
Right, right. So it is something that he's got to go and try to stop. I think it's an eye-opening thing. Now, look, I believe this was your idea, Luke, the baking of the bread as the title card.
It was, yeah.
It's always really hard to think of these title cards, and I thought this was a clever one.
And hopefully it makes you kind of go, well, how's that going to play in?
Yeah, what the heck, bread?
Here we have Brianna drawing, and we see what she's drawing, Stephen Bonnet. We initially were going to start with that image of Stephen Bonnet's picture, but we decided to show Brianna drawing in this sort of, you know, beautiful setting, not know what she's drawing, and then see that this image is still haunting her, and then obviously is brought into this sort of inciting incident of the episode.
Right, and this, I believe in our first draft, we had a few scenes before this scene, this was a culmination. It was like things were getting bad, and then suddenly there's a patient who's critical and comes in, and Claire loses this patient.
Yeah.
And ultimately, and this happens a lot too in the writing, sometimes you decide you don't really need a lead up. You want to start with more of a something more, like you said, an inciting incident that kicks the episode off, or this story off.
Yeah.
It used to be
something that we sort of built towards, and now we take it as the jumping off point.
Right. It's the catalyst for Claire's realization that, you know, she's going to need to do more if she's going to protect her family. And her arc this season has to do with the protection of family, realizing that she's part of the reason she is the reason that Brianna came, you know, to warn her about the fire. And then ended up Roger followed Brianna. Now they have a baby. Now they're stuck in this century. And Claire feels responsible for that because she knows that her family is there because they came to save her life. And she wants to do more to save theirs. And this is the seeds of her realizing, you know, I've got a grandchild who could step on a rusty nail and die, you know, from tetanus. And we don't have the same tools and equipment and medicines that I have. And they're not as safe in this century. So she's got to do something, whatever she can that's in her power, which is the medical side. While Jamie's protecting the family in his way, her arc is about what can I do to make them safer in this century since they came here for me.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is one of those type of episode that we do every once in a while where Jamie and Claire are on two different tracks in the episode. And you sort of can see them as being the same. They are trying to do the same thing. They're trying to protect their family. They're trying to protect their settlers, but in two different ways and in two different places in this episode mm-hmm. as well.
I'm not sure if this is the first time we see the surgery inside the surgery. I believe maybe we got a glimpse of it in 501.
I believe we did.
501 was the first time we saw the big house. And I just marvel at the surgery because of Gary Steele's.
It's so good. I mean,
it's beautiful for one. If I had to go to the doctor, I wish my doctor's office looked like that. But it's just a gorgeous set.
And here we see Jamie with Lieutenant Hamilton Knox, played by Michael Xavier. We really got lucky with him, just did a fantastic job in this role. I remember this scene was, I think the third scene we shot on the first day of filming season 5.
Right, you were there.
I was there, yeah.
We wrote this together, but Luke, you went to Scotland and supervised the filming of this episode, as you have several times before, and it
was fun. It was, you know, I've been there in the winter so often, and finally I was there kind of in the spring, and the weather was quite nice. It was a beautiful day, as you can see. The gorgeous green colors were starting to pop. This was a great location for us. And this was a scene that was added. I remember this scene was added after our first couple drafts. We felt like we needed to see Jamie and Knox getting to know each other. We needed to see also that Jamie didn't hate this man. Wasn't saddled with some awful red coat, but was appreciative of his loyalty to Crown. And yet, Jamie is, as the title says, walking between two fires. He's something he's keeping secret, which is that the person they're searching for is his godfather, and he's desperately hoping they're not going to find him.
Yeah, absolutely. That's picking up a thread that we ended, you know, last season. When it was delivered to River Run, this edict from the governor that said you must, you know, hunt down and kill Murtaugh. This is where we show that this is Jamie's his big dilemma.
Yeah.
And yes, casting Knox was crucial because we didn't want just some mustache twirling villain. We wanted it to be a guy that he doesn't know this is Jamie's godfather, and he. You know, he's trying to do his due diligence for the crown and his duty. And that's something certainly that Jamie respects and understands,
absolutely.
Even though, you know, it's a heinous task they've been given for Jamie. We should mention our whiskey. We forgot.
Oh, yeah.
Luke brought in a special bottle.
So the whiskey we're drinking today.
I should never let you pick the whiskey, but I kind of love it.
It's one I'd never seen before. It's called Fighting Cock, which is a funny name, but
it
and there's
is,
a
and
reason
we'll,
for it. We'll talk more about that
we'll
later in the
it.
Episode.
It shall become clear
yes.
towards the end.
It has to do with cockfighting, rooster fighting.
Which is a bad, bad thing.
Yeah, indeed.
And outlawed in today's world.
We see back there Isaiah Morton, one of the guys who took an oath to Jamie in the previous episode. He was the one who stepped up when Roger hesitated.
It's always so fun to watch these when we get to do the podcast finally, because Luke and I were talking before and realizing that this was shot either a little over a year ago.
No, I think not quite a year.
Not quite a year ago, but almost a year ago. Because we're already in the writer's room working on the new season 6. And so these seem so far away to us that we haven't seen them in quite a while. So it's a real treat when we get to sit down with a little wee dram and a whiskey and get to watch them, because we're like, wow, it looks really good. We don't we see the finished products, but we see so many of the rough early versions that to finally see it with. I might have to look away. That is the corpse, of course, of Leith Farish.
Prosthetic that was built for us.
And, yeah, we had to make what?
Yeah.
The body.
Whole body was, the head is obviously the actual actor, but and the face, but this prosthetic was amazing. It was, you had removable organs. We had our ER doctor.
Dr. Claire McGrady.
Dr. Claire.
Who has been helping us since the beginning, since season one, consulted on this body to have it be realistic.
Yeah, she was in there painting some of the organs. And
Well, it looks way more gross than bodies I've seen on, like, medical shows, on like, network shows.
Yeah.
So sometimes I have to confess I'm like, do we have to be quite so realistic? Because this doesn't look like sort of the non-offensive versions or... This one's pretty hard to look at. But it's,
here's her dilemma, you know. She's voicing her dilemma. What can she do to save more people in this time? She's got to get to them sooner is sort of something she's saying.
Well, we pride ourselves a lot on our authenticity, and we always
Absolutely.
Want, especially our medical stuff, to be the real deal. And... there is a different part of the book where Claire has to do an autopsy on someone in a story that we did not use it in that particular spot, and we do as in other stories if there's something we like and for whatever reason doesn't make it in a certain part of the show, we put it in a different part of the show, and we really always wanted to show her doing an autopsy. Oh, here's another one where I have to look away. My God. Luke, you
Lauren
were there.
Was a trooper
did we really
there for
need
this.
To show this?
No, well, we did because, you know, there's an interesting story point here, which I remember we talked about in the room a lot, which is that if Claire's looking for an apprentice, Brianna might be an obvious candidate for that. But we see in this prior scene that Brianna can't stomach the blood, can't stomach looking at the body, is about to be nauseous. And Claire steps out of that scene and sees Marsley, who's very deft with a knife and who we know is also very good with a needle. And and she's beginning now, Claire is beginning now to get that idea that Marsley might be a good candidate for an apprentice, for someone to train.
Right.
So that she can get to more people, reach more people, save more people. Here's Hillsboro, the town of Hillsboro, which is where the riot happened at the very beginning. We see now the aftermath of the riot. Edmund Fanning is a character from a previous episode and a
historical
real character. Person. Yeah.
Who was one of Governor Tryon's right-hand man, right?
Yeah, so we saw him in season 4 in the Wilmington episode in the theater with George Washington.
Which you wrote.
Which I wrote, that's right.
You're just trying to get your characters
back.
Do
I get
a
character payment for him? I might. Yeah. I don't know if you get him for historical people.
Huh.
But he's it's a fun character to bring back. Samuel Collins really did a fantastic job for us, always does.
Yeah.
You see all these men and women gathered trying to figure out what to do about the rioters from...
Well, yeah, here's where Jamie gets to see the damage that the regulators are doing, even though they have a totally legitimate cause. You know, the problem is the regulators, and we did a lot. We all read books on the regulators, did research this history, which was great because, you know, we've all been, you know, studied history in school, but there's little pockets of things that you don't know unless you look into it a little more deeply. And this was a part of North Carolina's history that a lot of us didn't know. And you know, the regulators did, they did try petitions.
They did
try peaceful protest, and it wasn't working.
Right.
The governor would make promises and break them and lie, or sometimes the governor maybe wasn't aware of the corruption that was in the lower ranks of the sheriffs and the judges.
The judges.
And so they finally pushed to their limits. They were like, we have to take matters into our own hands. And they started to be very violent. And then suddenly they look like the bad guys, but they felt it was the way to get attention.
And, this is a historical riot that happened. And they did assemble peaceably at first and then didn't get their way, weren't listened to. And it turned into an actual riot where people were tarred and feathered.
They burned people's houses down. They did things like drag judges through the streets.
Absolutely.
They would interrupt trials. I mean, they did a lot of stuff, but they felt like that was the only way to make the crown listen to their grievances.
Yeah.
And Jamie's getting an education here as well. Like, you know, because Jamie's sympathies are obviously with the regulators, not only just because of Murtaugh, but because he's faced oppression. He's been the victim of corruption, and this is supposed to be a new world, a new chance at life, a new place where, and now it's like, some of these old, you know, things are still happening because of politics, and they're still under the thumb of the crown, and he's got to deal with it.
Yep. I like this moment. Jamie's trying to get ahead of it in case Murtaugh would be one of the men that have been captured. He'd like to have a moment alone, but Knox won't give it to him.
Right. He's holding his breath that one of these men isn't his godfather already captured, because it would mean instant death for Murtaugh right here if it is.
Yep.
But he does recognize these guys. They're Murtaugh's.
Well, he doesn't recognize that first guy, but here he sees, this whole time we're going, is it going to be Murtaugh? And then, thankfully, it isn't, but Jamie realizes he actually knows these two guys.
Yeah, Brian Crana, he met in the episode where he goes to offer free land from Fraser's Ridge, and these guys won't take it because they don't want anything to do with Governor Tryon.
Yeah.
So,
and the other guy as well,
Ethan.
Jamie
knows Ethan, right? And they fought, or at least Brian Cran, I know, fought at Culloden. They fought by each other's flank or something. And
they didn't know each other, but they both fought in Culloden. That's correct. Yep.
Yeah, he says, "Oh, you were on my ride," or something, and so they have a bond in that they both, you know, are Scots from the
absolutely
and fought. So the trick here is Jamie can't let Knox know that he knows them, because they know Murtaugh is his godfather, and he's hoping they don't spill the beans here.
Right. It's a tightrope here.
That's the tension
the
of
whole
the scene.
It's a good insult. White-livered miscreants. Next time I don't like a pitch of yours in the room, Tony, I'll... Just kidding.
I'll toss a glass of whiskey in your face.
Oof.
Yeah, Jamie's in the background going, no, do not.
Oof. Oh!
I
knew that was coming. It still got me. That happened.
We did have a lot of discussion about how he should kill the guy. What, in fact, I think in an early version, or at least we talked about, that he drags him outside and does... and does a hanging,
threatens
essentially,
to hang
and
him,
and says you're treasonous. We're going to hang you on the spot. But production. Sometimes it was like, can we do a whole other scene outside? We would have to have a whole. Plus, we've already done the hangings. With in our last season, and this was actually more visceral. Luke wrote this scene, and it's a good one because it's so shocking and It was more shocking to have him do it in the moment and just run him through with the sword.
So just when Jamie thought it couldn't get worse. Oh.
Animals don't fare well in this episode.
Well, he got away.
That one was a smart squirrel.
Yeah,
this is... we love that Brianna has been shown in other episodes to be a really good markswoman. And a little bit of role reversal that... That Roger's not as adept with a weapon there.
Right. And she's got to teach him.
Yeah.
Well, and what's great about that, too, is he's somebody who's just been told he's a captain in the militia.
Yeah.
And yet doesn't really know how to shoot a gun. He's an Oxford professor from the 60s, you know.
Yeah, Roger's not adapting as easily as Claire and Brianna have to being in the past. And it's kind of ironic because he's a professor who studied history. And knows a great deal about it. But to study it and to live it is two different things. Whenever we use these weapons, too, we have an amazing armory guy who I'm sure we've mentioned before, Jim.
Yeah.
And, whenever we fire every scene that has guns in it, we essentially have to have a meeting with him where we say, what kind of guns would they have? Do we want to shoot it for real, or do we want to use a special effect later? But he has every kind of weapon, rifle, musket, pistol.
Yeah.
In his giant armory room,
and then all of our actors have to go and learn how to shoot these things. These rifles, I don't know, Tony, if you've held them.
Oh, they're heavy.
They are super heavy.
Yeah. I have held them, and but they're kind of, it's fascinating how they did back then, and sometimes how much time it took.
Yep.
To load them, people don't realize, it's not like an automatic weapon. They have to load and reload. It takes so much time.
Yeah. That's trickery. No turkey was hurt.
No turkeys were harmed in the making of this.
I love this. Just this shot. That's obviously, we film in Scotland, but that is, for all the world, that looks like the Blue Ridge Mountains back there.
This is sort of about the beginnings of, Bree's with her whole family. She's got Claire and Jamie and, her new father her biological father that she's getting to know. And to her, that was such a gift to be able to come here and get to know Jamie and to be with her mother. Roger's here basically because of her.
Yeah, and he never intended to stay, and he doesn't think she ever intended to stay. And maybe she didn't, but at the same time, she's feeling like maybe this is the place to be. She has a child. We don't know if that child can travel.
Yeah, they don't know if Jemmy can go through the stones, so it's sort of the beginnings of a, what could become an issue between them.
Yeah. There's a guilty man.
Yeah, Jamie's just...
Yeah, at this point, he knows Murtaugh wasn't one of those three men, but he's horrified by what happened, and yet his goal here is to try to save the two men who are left in that prison cell, one of whom he knows and likes and fought with, as you mentioned.
He knows that that man died protecting Murtaugh. I mean, the guy said, "I am Murtaugh," which we always talked about in the room as our Spartacus moment.
Yep. Where, that was one of the inspirations for the episode, that idea. Yeah.
Where they're like, look, you might as well, if you're, you know, I will die for my leader. And that guy, you know, Jamie has immense, gratitude there for what happened, that this man was willing to die for Murtaugh, and then an immense guilt that, like, look at what I'm trapped in doing. This is the funeral?
The funeral of
Leith.
Leith Farish. This song is an old song, and yet it is from the future of this time. It is, I think, from the
1800s. Oh, yeah, you picked this song, and I remember you came in and played it for me. You were like, hey, what do you think of this? And it was a gorgeous song.
It's a beautiful hymn, yeah.
And actually, at one point, we had Abide With Me as the title of the episode.
That's right.
Because it hit a few of the themes, but then we realized that the one pertaining to Fiery Cross was a little more relevant. But
I think ultimately better choice for the title. But it's a beautiful hymn, and it was a lovely little moment. This was the first scene we shot in season 5.
The very first one.
The very first scene.
Because we block shoot, which means we shoot episodes 1 and 2 together. It wasn't like episode 1 was all shot and then episode 2. Then we mix and match the scenes.
Yeah.
So a scene from this episode, episode 2, was actually the very first one shot when we started season 5. I love this scene.
And they're so good, these two.
I remember this is one of my scenes, and I thought it was really fun, because what's more juicy than having the daughter of Leary, who has said that Claire from the beginning has said Claire was a witch.
Right.
She sees Claire and is like, oh man, it was my mother, right?
So good.
I knew that her reaction would be
in this moment. Love it.
Yes. she's such a great actress that adds a little sparkle to the show, for sure. She's just very feisty, and I love their relationship. I love that the fact that, you know, Claire probably never thought she'd, you know, love, or, you know, Leary's daughter, or that she'd be part of the family. And Claire's, I mean, this is very flattering, you know, for as freaked out as she is, a respected healer is saying, I see talent in you. I see something in you. And
she doesn't squirm away
or
get grossed out the way Brianna had.
Yeah, I think people won't see this coming.
You can just notice, by the way, there's some wrought iron, period appropriate rib spreaders on the table. Holding the ribs apart of this cadaver.
Something you never want used on you.
The things that our prop department will come up with. Props department. Amazing. And this is an interesting idea, too. You know, I mean, autopsies had been around in this time, but they weren't used very often. And so for Claire to try to explain what an autopsy is to a person like Marsley, you know, is an interesting dilemma for a scene.
Well, I like that she's like, this is defiling God somehow, that this is against God, because Marsley is very religious. And what Claire is explaining is, like, God values life. He wants us to live.
Yep.
He has given us these gifts of medical knowledge you know, in Claire's view, it's not against God or religion. It's something that is,
something that preserves life.
That preserves life, which is a precious thing. Yeah. So I think I like that she talks Marsley into it, because it's something Marsley can understand on her terms. Claire's not particularly religious herself, but, you know, has her own kind of spirituality, but she has to make, you know, a case to someone who has the thinking of the 18th century that this would be something against God, when today, the medicine of today, we don't see it that way.
Right. Not at all.
I mean, this basically, this whole episode is about, you know, twisting the vice, putting Jamie in this vice that...
Tighter and tighter place, yeah. And that is true. He is trying to save all of their lives. Murtaugh's, these guys.
Yep.
His own, his settlers, even Knox. He's trying to... As it says, walk
I
between
really
two
like
fires.
That actor, Luke Ruskell. That's Luke Ruskell.
Yep.
What's the character name is?
Is Lee Withers.
Lee Withers. Because I think Jamie respects these guys, and they're more his people, and they're calling him out on this. They're like, "What the hell? You know, what are you doing?" And he's able to send a message to Murtaugh through them.
Yeah.
So.
And this was an important moment for me, what he says here, what Lee says. That one, where Jamie realizes these guys really might be ready to wage war. They've got a lot of men.
Yeah, they didn't see them as much of a threat. They thought they were just these little pockets of rebellion, but really they're amassing an army that is starting to be a bigger threat than what possibly the crown is expecting. Oh, this is great.
This used to be the first scene of the episode.
Yes, it did. Candle making.
I mean, in an earlier draft, not in the cut, but in an earlier draft. Yeah.
We did a ton of research because I remember telling our researcher, Courtney, at the time, find us something really cool, you know. And we looked at everything from soap making to gathering maple, where you walk around and cut little cuts in the trees and get sap and maple. And then candle making came up, and I remember you saying, "Let's do candle making because it looks so beautiful." If you go on YouTube, I think we went on YouTube, and I'm like, "Oh, I didn't realize that's how you make candles."
It's really kind of a mesmerizing thing.
It is, because it just looks very elegant the way they dangle from the strings and they hang them everywhere. But really, it's about women getting together and drinking and gossiping.
Yeah, they called these events frolics.
That's
back in the day.
That's right. We found Courtney found. She said, "Oh, when I looked it up, they were called work frolics," and we thought that was such a cool name. And it is. It's getting together to do a chore that wouldn't be very much fun by yourself, but if you get a group of people together, kind of like a writer's room. it's definitely better to do it with friends that you can laugh and. Pull your skills to get it done.
And we see, so this was, Claire realizing what she has to do, that partly she has to get information to these people before they end up on her surgery table. I love that we get to reference Ottertooth again and what happened to him when he tried warn people of the future or bring future knowledge to them.
And this is a little callback to the medical kit that she got in 401.
401, yep. Which Jamie bought in Wilmington, but it had been previously owned by a Dr. Rawlings. Jamie knows he's the traitor.
Well, Jamie is really at risk here, because any wrong step, if this guy figures out that Jamie's on the wrong side of this, that Jamie's working against him, he'd be immediately charged with treason, and he would be hanged.
Yep.
I mean, as we know, as most of the audience knows, or not, or the book readers know, that Murtaugh dies very early at Culloden and is not in the books and is not in this part of the story. But having him alive here, I think, is a very good storyline for Jamie, because it definitely gives him such a great dilemma. And it's just a character we loved so much in the book that we kept him around because we really treasured him and just wanted to see more of this relationship.
Yeah.
And here we've got the old-fashioned eye exam. I thought this was pretty cool. This
it's
was
a lantern
in the book,
with a magnifying glass on
and,
it.
And, yeah.
This scene takes inspiration from a scene in the book where she does an eye exam on
Roger. Yeah, she does an eye exam
on
I
Roger,
think he,
just like this.
Yeah, we haven't talked that much in the show about Roger's parents, so I like when we get to throw in little details like that. We know that he was raised by the Reverend.
Right.
But I think in this particular section of the season, he's wrestling with, you know, Jamie wants me to be a captain in a militia, and I'm a teacher. But his father was a soldier or a flyer, you know, in World War II and died in the war. And so there must be a part of him that thinks about his parents more during this time and feeling like I'm different than, you know, and wonder if it was, you know, from his upbringing that he became, you know, took a different path, and maybe things would have been different if he was raised the son of a soldier. But I just think he can't help thinking about his dad.
Yeah.
And I just like when we reference that, the things that make him maybe think about his past that we haven't been able, you know, to explore in the present story we're telling.
It's a neat moment.
That's a big
and surprising
admission.
Moment.
Yeah. It's a very selfless position of Claire to take, because she loves having her daughter. I mean, he wouldn't want to see their grandchild grow up, but she knows how dangerous it is here, and she knows that the things that medicine can do in the future. And it would probably be And here's where, you know, obviously this is the setup for her thinking, well, what, you know, Claire's not one to sit around on her hands. She, if she sees a need, she's a pioneer in a lot of ways. And she's someone that is driven to make things better for the people around her.
Yeah. And I think she's inspired somewhat in this scene by Roger's dedication to, you know, even though he might want to go back, if Brianna doesn't, he's going to stay, you know, and he's going to do what he can to make that work.
Yeah. There he is. Murtaugh, I meant.
Yeah.
But now there's another guy with a beard with him. This, you can explain
Herman
who
Husband.
This is, Herman Husband.
He's a real character from history, a real person, who was part of the Regulator movement. He was not so much a quote-unquote soldier in the Regulator movement, but he was considered a leader of the movement and a sort of an apologist
a
for them. He would, he was a Quaker
and
minister.
A pacifist. He was definitely a pacifist and not one for violence.
But he believed in their cause. He believed in the injustice.
Yes.
He saw the injustice that they were struggling against. And was outraged by it. So this was a great location. This is, I think it's actually an old quarry, but just that rock backdrop
is gorgeous.
Is so cool.
Yeah, that is a really cool location.
Heck of a thing to light at night.
And all of these, this isn't special effects. These are tents. The art department gets tents in there, sets up a whole camp.
Yep. It's pretty amazing what they do.
It is amazing what they do. I saw a tweet the other day, and it had a picture of, it was a scene from, I think, the big house at Fraser's Ridge or something, and it said, and the caption was, I wish I could live in this picture. And I thought, God, it made me feel very lucky because I thought, we do get to live in these pictures in a way, because when we're there, when you're on the set and you spend, all day or several days in a set, it's so authentic that you do feel like you're there in another time. So just for a wee while, you get to experience being in a camp like this, or whether it's a battlefield or a home by the fireplace. We live in each of these pictures when we're lucky enough to be there when they're filming, and it's just a joy. It's one of the big joys of working
it's
on the
great.
Show.
It's fantastic. And here's the bread comes back into play.
I like this because they're like, are you insane? Why are you?
But she has a plan. She's been inspired.
I mean, in some ways, it must be cool, really cool for Claire to have someone there, someone else there from the 20th century.
Oh, yeah.
Because every time she does some of her crazy stuff, there was never anyone to comment on it. And now Bree or Roger can be like, what are you doing? What are you talking about? Or what are you? And then they can, they can talk about it more.
Yeah. I do love this scene. I love the energy of it, how excited she is. But I get Brianna's caution here as well,
Well, Brianna knows this Otter Tooth story, and that was a man who was killed for, coming back and talking about the future and saying he was trying to save people. And now she sees that her mother is like, I'm going to save everybody by inventing something 100 years before its time.
Yep.
Well, that is taking a huge chance. And, Claire's already been on trial as a witch. I mean, so maybe it's not the smartest thing to do for her own personal safety, but Claire is never going to let that stop her. And that's part of why we love this character.
Yeah.
She will put herself at risk, especially for medicine and for things for her family or for, when she feels like she's got a purpose and there's some knowledge she has that by sharing it, she can save lives.
Yeah. There comes a point where you say, we're here, and I have to do the best I can do with the knowledge that I have in this time to stay in this time and help people in this time. And kind of what she says there, space, time, history be damned.
All right. That's one of my favorite lines.
We love to use, we were so glad that we were able to use this song.
Yeah.
It came out just in time for Roger and Brianna to have heard it and loved it before they left.
Exactly.
But it's great because Jemmy's name, of course, is Jeremiah.
Yeah. And this is, you probably will recognize, the cabin is Jamie and Claire's cabin from last season.
Yeah.
And now that they have the big house, they have left their cabin to Bree and Roger. So it's a fun location because you go from the big house to the cabin. And we thought the cabin was super cool when we first saw the cabin last season. When I remember walking around and being like,
great.
Ooh, this is great. Fancy digs. But now the big house is even more amazing. But it's nice to go and revisit this. And it's nice that they can.
It's a beautiful day again. Yeah, sometimes when we're in Scotland, it's just so rainy and snowy and everything else. I lucked out with the weather a bit.
You lucked out with some good weather there. And, of course, this is... Roger accidentally is going to find, because obviously Bree, what she went through last season, you know, she's not over it, you know, the
no, it haunts her. And that's part of this. The drawings are, we always said, is her way of trying to get this out of her, to exorcise the demon in a way. And we wanted to show different versions of the drawing. Some don't look like him at all. Some are really dark.
Yeah.
Some have sort of failed attempts. And
it's eating away at her, and she's using her artistry as a means of maybe trying to exorcise the demons of this, what happened to her. And this is a
and just contrasting that with this epic moment for a parent.
Kid's first steps, but Roger's, he's worried about her. Here we go. All right. So in the book, there's a reference to cockfighting. It's not a scene in the book, but I believe it happens in a letter where it's John Gray or someone says Stephen Bonnet's been seen.
Yes, and he's been seen at a cockfight, in some back alley cockfight.
So we were going to do a cockfight. We really were excited about just the drama and the it fits Stephen Bonnet, certainly.
Yeah.
But then when we actually quickly realized that it was way too dangerous. There's a reason this
dangerous
is outlawed.
For,
it's dangerous
for the birds, for the humans.
the roosters get hurt. The people can get hurt. So we did some research to try to find out what else we could do, because we wanted something that was a little down and dirty, that, yeah, you know, we didn't want card games. We wanted something a little risque and dangerous, and maybe. And it turns out that they had female fights.
Yeah. And they would often be not as sort of a regular thing, but as a grudge match, a literal grudge match. So in this case, we're saying they're both, in this case, prostitutes, and one is accusing the other one of taking her John, so to speak, her beau, and costing her some money. So,
yeah, they would take women
with legitimate
gripes and go, let's, you know, if you two are going to hash it out, we might as well take some bets. But it was kind of an underground thing, but was definitely attended by higher society people, you know, would go and kind of, you know, bet on these. So we see that Stephen Bonnet is, it's a big reveal. It's the first time we see our villain in this season. And we show, you know, the intent of it was obvious to end on this shocker, where we're going to see that.
Yeah.
What happened with Brianna, and knowing that he has a son, has affected him.
Yeah. He's trying to move up in the world a little bit. He's hanging with better,
he's cleaning up his
act. he's sort of bribed his way into some good friends here, some important, powerful friends. The costuming here was really great. How do we, you know, this sort of idea that he thinks he's a gentleman, but he maybe isn't getting it quite right. You know, it's he might be trying a little too hard, was sort of the thing we were going for here.
Yeah.
And so it turns into another grudge match, and the men are going to,
and now they're betting. They're betting on here. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm betting on Stephen Bonnet.
This was a practical location, not a set. We shot just these two scenes this day. It was a big day. Oof.
This is a man you don't want to cross.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm glad I'm not here when they filmed this either. Oh. Oh.
It's actually worse seeing it on TV than it is when you're there filming it. There's something sort of, you know, technical about it when you're shooting it. But
Yeah. Hmm. This whole scene was to get to the line, yep. I'm a father now, moment. And show kind of strike terror in our hearts that this is possibly the father of Jemmy, and he obviously has some designs here.
He certainly thinks he is anyway.
He thinks he is, and we're like, this is not a good thing for that man to know. And what's going to happen now? Perhaps there's a good reason for us to be worried.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I haven't seen that one in a while. I saw some early cuts. That was fun to watch.
I haven't seen it in a while, and I hope the audience enjoys it as much as we do. Two down.
Yeah.
And 10 more to go. And so we'll be back with you next week.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening and watching.